You are listening to the ArenaFan.com podcast, coming to you from Radio Row at the Waterbury Ballroom at the Sheraton New Orleans Hotel, the headquarters hotel of Arena Bowl 21.
And welcome back to Arena Fans Radio Row in New Orleans, site of Arena Bowl 21 between the Columbus Destroyers and San Jose Sabercats. Joining me now is a very special guest, founder of the Arena Football League, Mr. Jim Foster. Mr. Foster, welcome today.
Great to be here.
Now, Mr. Foster, everyone knows the story with the napkin, but...
It's not a napkin.
It's not a napkin.
You're looking at it here if I pull it out, so... Tear it up in the process. Yeah, I, everybody says I was in a bar somewhere, you know, and pulled a cocktail napkin off out and started. It's not true. It was 9x12 envelope.
Well, sitting here, we do have the actual envelope, and wow, it's got everything written down. It's got the whole field, 8 players on each side. It's truly, truly impressive. How do you think this league has grown from way back in '87 through now 21 years?
Well, it's growing terrifically. And it's much more stable now. It's much more established now. Much more visible, certainly, in the minds of American sports fans and the media. And those were major challenges we faced in the early days. Was we ran into a lot of challenges. I mean, one was financial, because I started with virtually no money and had to kind of carry it on my back and go out and raise money as I could. I'm not from a wealthy family. My dad doesn't own a Fortune 500 company or anything like that. You know, I'm just a kid from Iowa City, Iowa. So. You just go out and do it and kind of keep plugging away. We also had challenges with the media, because some of the media immediately embraced it, but there were other media people, particularly some of the older and more conservative media types, particularly in the print area, I think, that looked at it and said, it's not real football, it's hokey, yada, yada. It was designed for television, and which it wasn't. It works well on TV, but that certainly wasn't the case in point in the early days. So we had some substantial challenges to get it up and running. And when you're playing pro football in this country, I believe that pro football is held at a higher level than some of the other sports for the following reason. Baseball has been around for many, many years, well over 140 years or whatever it is now. Hockey is a Canadian sport that came in here years ago, but came in at with a few NHL teams, but predominantly has been played at the minor league level. And neither of those sports really have been played on television to the extent that professional football has been. Now, if you go back to pro football prior to the early 50s, it was a non-TV sport like everything else. But Pete Rozelle, when he became commissioner of the National Football League, had the wisdom to marry the television camera with the outdoor pro game, and it really accelerated its growth. And it was a huge, probably one of the most significant things that ever happened to football of any kind, but particularly for the NFL. College football was much bigger than the NFL at that time, but college football wasn't televised either. But when football went on TV, it became a major, major player in sports television. It grew faster and has become much bigger than televised basketball, baseball, and hockey. And that was one of the challenges that we really had to face in trying to build this league. I knew I was promotion manager of the National Football League at the time I invented this game. And when I finally set out to do Arena Football for earnest in late 1985, and I'd left the NFL and gone and run a couple teams in the USFL, and that was a good experience because I saw how difficult it was and how expensive it was to try to play outdoor football and to compete against the NFL. It was a thankless task, quite frankly. And I knew the USFL wasn't going to make it long term, and they didn't, of course. And Donald Trump had a lot to do with their demise, because he thought they were going to take the NFL head on and beat them at their own game, and that just wasn't going to happen. I knew that. So I thought we had an opportunity as a niche sport, off season, not playing NFL type football, to succeed, and that's really what's helped this league to grow. But I also knew we had to have TV, and I got us on ESPN with Bill Grimes, the president. In fact, I have the original contract in this valise of things that I brought down here to New Orleans out of our archives. And I knew that if we didn't do well on TV, we weren't going to make it. We had done market research on a test game in Rockford and a test game in Chicago, because I believe in that type of thing. And I knew that the fan response was good. Most of the media thought it was very interesting, maybe a little quirky at first, but they liked it. It was fast-paced. Everything. You know what? We can take market research today and compare it to Rockford and the Rosemont Horizon Showcase game in February of 1987, and it's almost identical. Fan response is always the same. Fast, intimate, high scoring, quick paced, can see the ball, less players, yada, yada. I mean, it's all pretty similar. But I thought if we don't get this thing up and running on ESPN and we don't have success with it, we're not going to make it. And unfortunately, the first year, we doubled the rating of the National Hockey League that they'd signed the previous fall. And that was good for us, but it also caused some problems because it brought so much notoriety to the game that I had a lot of investors wanting to get involved. And quite honestly, I wasn't a real experienced business person. I was a good marketing guy, and I had a good background in it. But I hadn't run a lot of businesses myself, so to speak. And, I mean, I was put in a situation. I was now dealing with some pretty wealthy guys that were, in some cases, pretty unscrupulous. And that proved to be a big problem a couple years down the road after the 88 season. So 87 was very successful. We played in Pittsburgh, you know, and had a great, you know, sellout crowd for that game, and it was a tremendous football game. Tim Markham's Denver Dynamite beat Joe Ehring's Pittsburgh Gladiators in a great game. And we went into the 88 season with a lot of high hopes, but that's when the problem started with some of the investors. And we got through 88. It was a pretty good year again with ESPN. And then after that, the wheels almost came off, and we did the Bingo Long Traveling All-Stars Barnstorming Tour of America in 89 to keep the league going. And quite honestly, I'm most proud of that because if we hadn't done that, if we would have taken a year off to reorganize, I don't think we ever would have been back. And from that point, when we reorganized in 1990 with franchise leagues, and with the help of Mike Ilitch from Detroit, who owns the Red Wings and the Tigers, we really started to rebuild, and it's been slow progress. But I would say that at about the time Dave Baker got involved, we were starting to get some stability. I was commissioner until 1992, and in 1992, things were we had played six seasons, and we were starting to feel like we were going to be around for a while. We had a TV contract with what is now Fox Sports. It was at that time Prime Television. It was one of the early sports television regional networks, and we were being telecast nationally, but it wasn't where, you know, cable sports is today, and we had not got back on ESPN. In 1991, we got back on ESPN, I believe it was 91, and that was good to get back on there. They only gave us a game of the week at that time, and they weren't giving us a lot of support. Yeah, I guess it was 92. It was right when I was finishing up as commissioner, and I felt that was really critical that we get back onto ESPN. At that point, I went off to do the Iowa Barnstormers, a team that had Kurt Warner, and I really, my long-term goal was to be an owner, and I felt by 92 that politically I wasn't the best guy to be running the league because some of the money guys were pretty high power guys. That's not my background. I'm a better marketing guy, and I really wanted to put a team together. So I stepped down as commissioner, did consulting for the league, stayed involved with the league, but then put the Barnstormers together and went with that full-time in 1994. And obviously had a lot of success with that. And really, somewhere in that time frame, Dave Baker got involved in Anaheim, I think, in 95, and then he ended up being the president of the league owners board. But we basically had a commissioner by the name of Jim Drucker who just wasn't the best guy. He wasn't comfortable with football. He had a background with the CBA, and Jim stepped down after the 95 season. And David was just kind of there as the president of the owners group, but it demonstrated he had some pretty good skills at working with people. And they asked him if he'd operate as kind of a pro tem commissioner, and that's how it started out. But it went from there. And David has done a lot of great things for this league. I mean, he is a super salesman. He's one of the greatest guys on his feet that I've ever seen. I mean, he knows how to spin it. And of course, he's got a political background. He was a mayor of Irvine, California. Ran for Congress at one point. He's very, very gifted speaker. He knows how to put a positive face on things. And as good as a salesman I am, sometimes when things were tough, I tended to be probably more honest than I should have been about. Not that he's dishonest, but I probably painted a more, you know, not doom and gloom picture, but a picture of reality than maybe I should have at sometimes, you know. And David's always been good about finding the upside and always trying to find a way to build things. And I give him a lot of credit for what he's done over his tenure as commissioner. I was the right guy to start it with my background and my tenacity and my almost naivete that I could do it, you know. And sometimes I look back and say, how did I ever get this thing done, you know, to the point that I did it? And, you know, I think some divine intervention probably helped at times too, but to keep it going. But David was a very good guy to come along when he did. And I would say that in the history of arena football, having me start it and then have Dave Baker pick it up at a time where it had some stability but really needed to grow. I mean, we were at a point where we had leveled off. We were probably about a 10-12 team league at that point, and we were hanging in there. We weren't big trouble, but it wasn't growing. It didn't have the legs underneath it to really take off and go to the next levels. And Dave really was responsible for that. So when you look at where we're at 20 years later, you know, if I had signed a contract with Fox Television I was offered after the 88 season and hadn't, or 87 season, and hadn't got into this Donnybrook with some investors that talked me out of it, who then tried to steal my patents and all kinds of things happened, we might be a lot bigger right now. But that didn't happen. I mean, they offered me a $10 million a year contract in late 1987. That was amazing. And I still had the ESPN deal to go with it for cable. And I made a strategic mistake because some guys with money basically, you know, convinced me that they could put more money into it and build it to a bigger level faster than, you know, working with Fox. And then at that time, Fox TV wasn't that big. But that fall, they came out with Married with Children, which was a huge hit. But at the time they were talking to us, they were just getting going, and they didn't really have that much. And these guys said, oh, why mess around with them? Don't sign some big contract with them for 10 years, even though they're going to pay a lot of money. It's a waste. You know, we can get ABC or CBS a couple years from now. And, you know, when I listened to them at the time, yeah, it made sense. It was a mistake, and I take that to my grave. But, you know, suffice to say, we are now much bigger, and I think that the current contract with ESPN is now something that really is really going to propel this league over the next 2 or 3 years to a much higher level. They have interest in the league now financially. They're part owners. They are very, very committed to arena football, and they really believe in the game. And they're doing things now that they couldn't do before the last time or the first time they were with us, and this is their third round with arena football. They have got so many networks that they can work with to promote us, you know, whether it's Classic or it's 2 or 1 or, you know, I mean, I can't think I could even tell you all the networks they've got going. The international visibility they give us, ESPN the magazine, all the shows that they've developed, you know, and obviously Mike and Mike and Cold Pizza. And I mean, there's so many things they've got going right now that they are supporting and building awareness of this game. And I think that that's just tremendous. I mean, we need to become a household commodity. That's how great leagues really survive, is they build that kind of base. And we're getting there, you know, and that's really been a big part of it. A lot of people contributed to this.
Excellent stuff. Now, when you originally created this game, the whole aura of free substitution that we're in now was not originally a part of it. But even back further than that, we came from 2 specialists most recently. You only had 1 specialist way back in the beginning.
Yeah, the first year we played with 1 specialist. You had a replacement for the quarterback. That was it. And everybody else played 2 platoon football or single platoon football. In the second year, I had something happen that prompted me to make a rule change. And that was one of the only ones we really made for a number of years. And that was that of any significance. And that was that a guy that had been a great player for the Oakland Raiders, an all-pro player by the name of Cliff Branch, wanted to come out of retirement and play for our team in L.A., the Cobras. I thought it was a joke when he first called me. I thought it was somebody pulling my leg, but it really was the Cliff Branch. And I ran track at the University of Iowa, and I competed in a couple meets that he was at in college out in Arizona. And he was a great athlete in college, both football and track. I mean, he's a world-ranked sprinter. And so I knew who he was when he played in the NFL, and I'd kind of kept track of his career. He came and played for us. The problem was he could still play receiver. He could still beat people left and right, but he couldn't play defensive back. He hadn't played since high school, and he couldn't backpedal well enough to cover anybody. He was Mr. Toast back there. We also had a kid that played for the Chicago Bruisers the first year that came back, named Reggie Smith, who had several kick return records for the Atlanta Falcons. I think somebody told me that he may still have one of those. I mean, he was pretty prolific kick returner. He was probably about 4'10", I think. And you couldn't catch him. I mean, he was so low to the ground, and he could go sideways faster, and he could go forwards. And he'd get the ball off the net in Chicago, and the crowds would go nuts. They'd start chanting, Reggie, Reggie, you know, and the whole place would be up for grabs. And he was an electric player that really brought a lot of excitement to the league because of his quickness. And you could, in arena football, no matter where you sat, you could see all this happening, you know. And then Cliff Branch, just because it was Cliff Branch, I mean, it was huge, particularly out in the West Coast there. So they weren't getting it done on defense, though. I mean, they were liabilities, but you had to put them out there if they played offense. So I made a rule change, and I called it the Branch-Smith rule. And basically what it was that I designated that you could have a second specialist, but the specialist duty was to play on offense, and then he was a designated defensive kick returner. In other words, we made them on any kick situation. That was our defensive responsibility. They didn't have to play scrimmage downs, but they had to play any kicking situations. And it worked out well, and I'm glad we made that change. Now, the change we made last fall, I was involved in it with the Rules and Comp Committee for the AFL. And, you know, it was a tough decision, but, you know, the NFL basically asked us if we would consider doing it so we could develop more players that might move on to the NFL. And I think, honestly, this was an anticipation of getting rid of NFL Europe. I mean, it had something to do with it, which has now happened. And I think that they were looking and saying, could we bring more players out of the Arena Football League if some of them could play one way? And the real issue was linemen in particular, because there's and you're seeing some changes in our game now. Now, we were concerned that perhaps we were going to see some defensive linemen that were so quick that we'd start seeing quarterbacks destroyed. But it hasn't worked out that way, because what's really happened is they've found bigger, stronger, better offensive linemen, particularly the guards, who are able to shield these guys out from coming around the corner. And really, I believe, I know in the AF2, I believe this year, the actual amount of sacks is down from a year ago, and I think it's the same way in the NFL, although I haven't seen the numbers. So the game really has not been changed that much, but what we've really done is accentuate the opportunity for more guys maybe to get NFL opportunities, because they can play, if they're not gifted enough to be a two-way player, but are specialized enough that they can work in a particular area. At the same time, I think a lot of teams have discovered that you cannot abandon completely Ironman football when you have a 20-man roster. So guys like Will Pettis are still very, very valuable players. And when we made this change last fall, I suggested to Commissioner Baker and the rest of the committee that we ought to really now focus on the specialist being the Ironman. In other words, flipping it from what it had been. And say, the guys that can snap that chin strap on for 60 minutes now become your special players. And I think that, in fact, is evolving. Because I know there were several teams that pretty much tried to stock their roster with one-way players. They pretty much said, we're going to junk the two-way guys. And they got in trouble with it because when they got into trouble with injuries, they didn't have anybody they could really go put in there. And some teams now have actually gone back more towards looking at having more two-way players that can go both ways. Maybe they'll specialize a little bit more on one than the other when they need to, but they can do both and do it well. So it's been an interesting change. I don't think it's really hurt the game that much. I'm glad it hasn't. I was concerned about it, but I think our game's just fine, and we move forward.
Now, you mentioned the development with the NFL and your relationship with the National Football League. Is the goal of the league sort of shifting towards giving guys the ability to prepare for the National Football League?
Well, not specifically, but I think it is, in the sense that when we started, it was a big deal when we got a guy that had been in the NFL. It was a big deal. We got a guy that might be good enough to go to the NFL. I mean, even back in the days of Kurt Warner, Kurt played for me with the Iowa Barnstormers, and that was a huge deal when Kurt had the success he did. His first year he didn't play that much, and we had other guys that went on to the NFL. I mean, there's been dozens of guys playing the NFL now from Arena Football. But I think now, because of the enhanced relationship with the National Football League, because of the fact that you got seven NFL owners and teams involved with Arena Football now, like the Voodoo and here in New Orleans, and the Desperados and Elway and the Broncos with the Crush and so on, and more to come, like Washington, it makes a difference. I mean, I think now there's a more focused interest in what Arena Football can provide for the NFL. We have a good relationship with them. I when I started Arena Football, being a former NFL employee, I went back and sat down with them before we played the first season. I wanted them to know what we were doing, and I wanted them to specifically know I wasn't trying to take their players like the USFL did. I wasn't playing in their stadiums. I wasn't playing in the same season. We were a different game, a niche sport, a complement to the outdoor game, and that's really what we are, and that's how we defined ourselves, and that's why this game's worked, because you can't go to an Arena Football game and sit there and say this is just like watching an outdoor game, because you're not. And it's a different product for a different time of the year, and it's had a lot of success because of that, and it will continue to grow. And they like that because we're good for football. We create more football fans. We keep more football fans interested in football, and that's what the NFL wants. And we're working with youth football just like they are, and that's a joint effort. And there's a lot of positive things happening there. So I think the relationship with the NFL continues to grow. It's a healthy one. And if we can put kids in the National Football League that can go make hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, that's great. If they can't, they're making pretty good money in the Arena League now, and it's certainly a lot better than going and playing semi-pro and minor league ball like I did, where we got maybe $100 a game of even that, so years ago.
Okay, finally, let's move on to this weekend. What does it mean for the Arena Football League to have the game here in New Orleans, and what does it mean for the city of New Orleans to have the Arena Bowl?
Well, there's a great pedigree and history of having professional and college championships played in New Orleans. I happen to be a very partisan New Orleans fan. I love New Orleans. I almost went down here with the New Orleans Saints at one time many years ago. I play traditional jazz. I play blues. I'm a horn player, trumpet player. I love the food down here. I just ate some phenomenal gumbo and etouffee for lunch. I love the culture and the architecture here, and it's a fun place to do a bowl game. I actually believe for college football, there's no better place than the Sugar Bowl. Unfortunately, the Big Ten doesn't get into the Sugar Bowl very often, which I regret, because I'd love to see 40,000 Iowa Bumblebee fans, black and gold, running around down here. They drive them nuts here, but And San Antonio, in fairness, is a great place for a bowl game, too, because they're both very intimate. The hotels and all the food and the clubs and everything is all right together near the stadium, and it's a neat environment. But more importantly, New Orleans has been through a very, very difficult disaster, and it's not over. I had the opportunity with Bill Curl, who runs one of the managers of the arena and the Superdome, who I've known for a long time, when I was commissioner of arena football for the first 6 years. You know, we had a team here for several years called the New Orleans Knight that played in the Superdome, which didn't work out physically. It was just too big to be a good venue for arena football. But I got to know Bill. Bill took my family and I around Greater New Orleans, and we were out in St. Bernard's Parish. We were over in Lakeside or Lakeview, all these areas that got hit really hard. And 2 years later, there's a lot of trailers people are living in. Their houses are not been rebuilt or fixed. There's literally thousands and thousands of blocks of homes that are just sitting there vacated. People have left. They can't afford to rebuild them. It's a very sad situation. This area right here is thriving again, which is good. But there's a lot of parts of New Orleans that are really in trouble, and even outside New Orleans along the Gulf Coast. And anybody's listening to this, I want them to know that New Orleans needs a lot of support. They've had a lot of problems with FEMA and getting grants. They've had a huge problem with the insurance industry. A lot of people can't even get the insurance companies to pay them for damages that they're owed. I mean, it's a terrific problem down here. And this is a great area of the country. There's a lot of good people down here. It's a wonderful place to come. And I'm glad that they've got the French Quarter and the tourism going, because they really need that economic generator to get up and running again. And I'm glad we can help out with that. Dave Baker made a great decision to push to do this here.
Now, Mr. Foster, can you discuss your involvement with the league now?
I'm kind of in between right now. I went from the Iowa Barnstormers after we sold to became the New York Dragons. We were in Des Moines, and when the league was unionized, it was great for the players, and quite frankly, it needed to happen for the league long term to have a collective bargaining agreement. But it really put some of the smaller markets out of the league, like Des Moines, which was less than 500,000 people, and Albany and Oklahoma City, Hartford. Those teams really were in markets that really couldn't absorb the cost of a unionized player league. I mean, our payroll went from less than 400,000 over a million in 1 year. And in a market with less than 500,000, you just can't find enough sponsorship dollars, and we're pretty much maxed out on our seat sales. We were doing well there at the time. So I ended up going over to the AF2. I helped found the AF2, put it together. I was approached on it in 1998, and I worked with a very successful hockey owner in the Quad Cities, which is where my Steamroller team has been. We flipped the Barnstormers to AF2 from AFL. That didn't work well because there was kind of a negative reaction in Des Moines to not having an AFL team, even though they couldn't support it. So after a year, they decided to build a new arena in Des Moines, which was part of our problem there. It was a very old building, and we shut the Barnstormers down and put it in dormancy. I had started a night as a charter team in 2000, the Quad City Steamrollers, which won two back-to-back championships and went 37-1. And we did pretty well there for the first 2 or 3 years. The market has had some economic issues, and there's been some other things that have come up there just in terms of the way the market is structured that have made it difficult for both us and the hockey team, which was one of the top hockey teams in the country. Their attendance dropped down to from 8,000 under 1,000, even though they were still winning. It's just kind of a problem with the market. So after 7 seasons, I just last year said, I've done enough of this. I'd lost some money. I couldn't get it turned around the way I wanted. So I just got out of the team in the Quad Cities. We now are right now putting the Barnstormers back into AF2, working on that. I'm going to have some involvement with that to help get it started, but I really don't want to move back up to Des Moines. I made a move to the Quad Cities, which is on the Mississippi River. It's Davenport, Moline, Rock Island, Bettendorf. It's about 160 miles straight west of Chicago on Interstate 80. And I've got kids in school. It's just not the best timing. So I've been doing some work for the league on a project basis, primarily for the AF2. I'm still on the board of directors of both leagues. Once I get the Barnstormers put together and up and running, I think there's some probability I may be doing more for the AFL again. That time will tell. It's kind of in between right now. I've also done, through the AF2, quite a bit of consulting for some teams that needed help. And I've got a strong background in that, obviously. So I think I'm going to be continuing to do some of that. I've also been approached by several universities in Iowa about helping them set up sports marketing programs and management programs and doing lecturing. So there's some things out there to keep me busy right now. But I would hope that I would continue to stay involved with arena football. I mean, it's a big part of my life, and I'm very much obviously, it is my life in many respects, so I probably want to continue to stay involved.
Once again, you've been listening to Arena Fan Podcast. This is Adam Markowitz in New Orleans, site of Arena Bowl 21. I'd like to thank my guest, Jim Foster.
Glad to be here. I think you're going to see a great game tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to this ArenaFan.com podcast coming to you from Radio Row at Arena Bowl 21. Arena Bowl Radio Row is brought to you by Voodoo Barbecue and Grill.